This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for business on BFM 89.9.
BFM's Merdeka Special is presented by Masing.
You're listening to Open for Business. My name is Arvind Yuvraj, and this is our My Merdeka special. We're bringing you a five-part series showcasing entrepreneurs and personalities who have found their independence, aka their Merdeka. In the series, they will share their trials and tribulations, the battles they face, the blood, sweat, tears, and of course, money that they've put in to achieve their dreams. On this fourth episode, we're featuring Ian Yee of Rage.
My name is Ian Yee, and I'm the Deputy Executive Editor and Producer of Rage.
When it comes to Rage, it's all about finding that voice in a landscape that often has shaky perceptions of young people and their worth, especially when it comes to important socio-political issues. Being young means you have to speak louder to be heard, and that's exactly what Rage did. The award-winning media platform is now synonymous with high-quality journalism that pushes boundaries and speaks clearly on even the most controversial issues.
No, definitely. We worked very hard to try to distance ourselves from that, because we always find it very condescending when media companies feel like, oh, I gotta create something that's just for you guys, you know, have something that's bright and shiny and, you know, has all like glitter all over it, you know, just to catch your attention. So we figured we're just gonna do journalism as best we know, you know, the best journalism we can do. And then we're going to tell it in our own voice, in a tone that's comfortable to us. And that means on social media, on short videos. And so it's kind of worked out well. But it's kind of like created this niche. And a lot of people ask us, you know, how do you describe your work? So we've kind of drilled it down to two things: investigative journalism and impact journalism. So it's a powerful combination. So we use our investigative work to uncover a lot of social justice issues. We create a lot of awareness about it. And then after that, we create a kind of impact campaign to push through solutions to solve those problems that we brought up in the first place.
You think it's still limiting, that term, you know, youth, or has it become, you know, empowering over the years? Because, you know, now young means something else because of our social media age. It's like youth is in control.
I think it's something that's going to happen every generation. All right. Young people people will look down on us, you know. I'm not young anymore, but the older generations are always going to say, oh, back in my day. It's going to happen forever. And I was in Rage when it was a youth pullout for about, I think, maybe 5 years. And you see some generational shifts. And now, about 10 years later, I'm still seeing those same generational shifts, right? That divide. So I think that's never going to end. So that's why we didn't want to be specifically tied to that. Having said that, I do think this generation is setting itself apart. This current generation of young people, the Gen Zs or whatever you want to call them, they are really rising up to the challenge because they are empowered by digital media. And you see the kind of heroes that they have today, that they've created today, people like Greta Thunberg, the climate activist, you know, the Parkland shooting survivors. They are calling for gun controls in the US where it's such a heated kind of topic. So these are the new heroes of this generation. And you can't ignore that. So young people today definitely are rising up to the challenge to solve a lot of these issues that the previous generation have kind of left behind for them, like climate change. Mm-hmm. It's not their fault, but they are standing up and trying to find a solution. So in that sense, I get where you're coming from. So we don't want to tie ourselves to a particular age group or generation, but we just want to speak out on these same issues that are currently being highlighted by the youth of today.
Tell me about the early days, though, because now you're like an award-winning media platform. But back then, being made up of, as you mentioned, you know, like millennials, you're a millennial, I'm a millennial. And millennials, it comes with its own connotations and stuff, yeah, as we know. Did you need to prove yourselves to be taken seriously?
Yeah. God, we had to prove ourselves every single day. Even back then, I think I was very lucky because I had two editors, Ivy Soon and Nikki Cheong. They were always encouraging us to think, you know, beyond ourselves, right? We were very much caught in that kind of cycle where, oh, we're just young people. They just want us to do this fun stuff. People expect us to do lifestyle and entertainment. But my editors at the time at Rage, when I was just starting out, they always told me that, you know, there's a lot of power in what we do. Don't let them pigeonhole us. Let's go for the serious stories. Let's go for the big stories. And we tried our best with a very small team, very limited resources, and with kind of like the whole world expecting us to do fun and fluffy stuff. Mm-hmm. They kept pushing us to test ourselves, you know, as journalists, as real journalists. So when finally I took over Rage, I just wanted to keep that, you know, that spirit alive. When things got a bit difficult, I figured, you know what, let's just go all out. You know, if we're gonna crash and burn, let's do it in the blaze of glory, right? Let's just go all out. Top-notch journalism, forget all the other entertainment and fluffy stuff. You know, that was kind of our crutch for a long time. Like, that brings in numbers, you know, that brings in, you know, that gets clicks on your website.
Hmm.
So we said, we're going to ditch all of that. Screw the numbers game. Let's do hard-hitting journalism. Let's go all out, investigate, and see where it goes. And just trust that young people will respond to this kind of content. And it has. It has worked out.
Like quality above quantity kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's actually what we were saying back then. Yeah.
When did that click happen, though? You know, like, there must have been that one story when people started to, you know, really pay attention. Like, okay, you know, these guys, they mean business. You know, this is serious stuff.
It was our very first project. We were very, very lucky. Mm. So there have been a couple of times where I have had the time to look back at how far we've come, like when I've been asked to do some talks and speeches and stuff. And, you know, we actually started calling for this transformation of Rage in about 2014. Took us almost 2 years to get it approved in late 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time it happened, we were fully ready. Mm-hmm. So we immediately, our senior producer, Elroy, he already had a story ready.
And that was a whole 10 years after you guys started.
Yeah. I think pretty much. I think that was a good 10 years. Yeah.
Mm.
So we made a pretty big jump. And we were very, very ready for it. So our first documentary, The Curse of Sarawan, was on this. We got these reports about a village, an Orang Asli village up in the north. And there was this alarming rate of child deaths there. So once we got the approval for it, we were like, okay, let's go. We're going to do our first investigation. It's going to be a documentary. It's going to be video format. It's going to be great. And thankfully, it all worked out. We were so clueless back then. But we were passionate enough. We made it work. We went into the Orang Asli village, stayed there for a week, no cell phone reception. We just kind of figured it out as we went along. And that project really worked out. It made headlines. People who watched the video were like, wow, this is a brand new way of form of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a 10-minute documentary, which back then wasn't really a thing. You know, if it's a documentary, you're thinking it's like a one-hour thing on Discovery, you know. So that was kind of new, and a lot of people finally set up and like, okay, this might work. And that's where I think Rage kind of never looked back.
Ian, tell me about your story, though, and how you got to be the editor of Rage. Because I think you were supposed to spend like a year in journalism. I think then you wanted to move on to finance. Obviously, you've stayed on for way, way longer. Why?
Yeah, so I actually am one of the very few people who actually did journalism in college.
Hmm.
I got my degree in that. Didn't really want to do it, but, you know, it was just what was available at the time. So I took it, and I figured, you know, I'm pretty good with words. I'm a pretty good writer. Why not? But the plan was always to do something else. I had all kinds of different plans. I wanted to go to do music. I wanted to do law. I wanted to do finance. That was what came up at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So after I finished my degree, I was like, I put in all my like scholarship applications, and there was like a break until the new semester starts. So my parents were like, why don't you try a job in journalism? That's when I applied for Rage.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of just fell in love with it, you know. So I said, okay, you know, let's do this for another year. You know, I have these two really great editors who are really good mentors, who really showed me the power of good journalism, you know, of just good, honest, responsible journalism. And I distinctly remember she assigned me to do this story about young adults with learning disabilities. So a lot of people, you know, you focus on people learning disabilities when they're much younger,
mm-hmm.
but you never think about that transition into adulthood, you know, into the point where some of them start thinking about starting families and getting married. So she told me, you know, why didn't you pursue this? And I just went all out for it. And I remember when that story came out, you know, I had all these parents who were emailing me and telling me, you know, this is such an important story. Thank mm-hmm. you for doing this. And so, yeah, these are the small little things that I learned on, and that those first few months on the job that I realized, you know, how important journalism can be. So I guess I got hooked and here I am 11 years later. So, yeah.
You're also one of the few people who studied for something and you're actually doing the thing that you studied for. Because like most people study something and then they end up doing something else completely. So
yeah, so that's the thing. I studied something thinking I'll do something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's still, the principle still applies. It's never going to quite work out how you plan.
You're listening to the fourth episode of our My Merdeka special series happening all week long, and we are talking about finding your own unique voice in the Malaysian media landscape with Ian Yee, editor and journalist at Rage. We will be back in a bit, BFM 89.9.
Banana from Malaysia. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Welcome back to our My Merdeka special. It's our five-part series showcasing entrepreneurs and personalities who have found their independence, aka their Merdeka. On this episode, we're featuring Ian Yee of the award-winning media platform, Rage. Do you feel this added pressure though, you know, when you're part of a bigger entity, a bigger company? Not saying anything about the Star, you know, it's a good paper, popular paper, inherently Malaysian paper, but you know, needing to step out of the shadow of that brand.
I don't think so. I think if anything, our idea of kind of like branding Rage separately has taken a lot of pressure off our shoulders,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a way. It was something completely brand new, and we're doing our own thing. We're not being compared to what Star is doing. So yeah, that was kind of liberating for us. It's always nice to be able to just branch out. And so we kind of get the best of both worlds, right? On one hand, we are this brave startup. You know, we're going out there and trying something different. On the other hand, we're getting a lot of support from Star as well.
Mm-hmm.
When we need their help, they're always there. They're kind of like the big brother. It's worked out well for both of us.
Okay. What about when choosing stories? You know, your story is always like deep cuts, like deep dives into a certain topic. How do you pick what to talk about?
That's always a struggle for us. We always have like 10, 15 different things going on at the same time, and we want to give everything 100%, but it's not possible. We only have that many people. You know, the industry is going through tough times, so it's not like we can hire as we choose. So it's always a process of prioritizing, figuring out which causes we feel we can actually move the needle on, and kind of move the conversation forward and move and propose proper solutions and advocate actual change, which sometimes is very, very painful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's depressing when we have to shelve certain projects just because, well, we don't have enough people, silly things like that. You it always feels so silly. You know, like my producers are probably the ones that feel it the most. You're like, hey, but you know, we should do this. We should go all out. And I'm like, yeah, but we just don't physically have the numbers. We just mm-hmm. unless we all work here 24/7, which some of them sometimes do already, and I do feel very, very bad. But that's the state of journalism, you know, around the world, I suppose. And if Malaysians can rally around us, you know, it would be great. We really want to do more good work. And I think every news organization across the country will say the same. And it's so easy to attack journalists. It's so easy to call out mistakes. But it's very rare that you see any positive mention of, you know, the work that they do, that we do. Yeah. This is the other side of the story that Malaysians should hear.
Should know. Is there a need to be different, you think? Like, is that something that drives you or not? Like, to be a separate voice, saying things that not many other people are talking about?
I think the process that we have is quite unique. So whenever my team takes up a champions a cause or talks about or tries to tell a particular story, usually there's a lot of depth in it. Usually it's quite it comes with a solution. It comes with a call to action. So in that sense, we're not so too concerned, overly concerned with, oh, it's already been reported last week, which in a news cycle is like forever.
Yeah.
So for us, we always feel, yeah, you know, it's good. Let's build on that work. It was reported last week. But, you know, maybe Rage can bring, can move the needle forward, you know, in that sense. So I think our motivation has never been to be different for the sake of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, we're actually quite pragmatic people. We don't, there's not a lot of room for creativity in what we do, actually. We're all very solution driven, which is probably not great considering that we are huge fans of design thinking. You shouldn't be like, you know, too focused on the end product or the end goal, right? You should focus on the process. But sometimes for us, you know, we see a problem. We talk to all the stakeholders. The journalists are always the ones standing in the middle. You know, we speak to government, we speak to police, enforcement, civil society, the victims. So we are in a unique position to advance kind of solutions, right? So whenever we have that solution in mind, for us, it always just makes sense. Let's build our campaign towards that solution. Let's advocate for that solution. So we're driven very much by that. If sometimes it means going the traditional route, using print media, which we've done to, I think, quite good effect,
mm-hmm.
Then so be it. So that's what we do.
Some of the stuff you talk about, I'm sure there's a danger there. You spoke about the job of a journalist, parts that not many people think about. It's a dangerous business. You know, it's nature of the beast, nature of the job. Does that element of danger put you off sometimes, or does it excite you? Does it make you wanna push the story even more because dangerous means that it's all the more worth chasing after?
Yeah, I'd be lying if I said it doesn't affect us. Of course it does, but I'm just very, very lucky to work with a bunch of journalists who are very brave, incredibly brave young people, and I know their motivation. It's to help people. I've heard them talk, you know, outside the office, you know, casual settings. You know, we hang out a lot. We are like a very big dysfunctional family. A lot of times, the reason why they keep going is because of the victims of these issues. Because, you know, you see how the Orang Asli are suffering from these diseases that we uncovered in that first documentary. We speak to victims of child sexual crimes. That drives us on. I've spoken to victims of human trafficking, and it really affects us. You know, it's very hard to shake those kinds of stories off. I sat across a guy, you know, at a mamak who was telling me how he was trafficked to Malaysia. He's been here for by now 5.5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's not seen his family since. His family has lost all their savings trying to send him here to study, and he gets, you know, trafficked into a construction site. Barely gets enough, earns enough to support himself, still sends money back home to his father who needs life-saving medication. So, stories like this. And the only way you can react is to do something about it. So that drives us on, even though there are some risks, you know, taking on the traffickers in that particular case. Of course, that came with some risks. But we are very careful. We work with the authorities always. We're very careful, even with the authorities. We take time to figure out who is trustworthy. And they're always really, really good officers. What we found is, you know, I think that's another thing. It's very easy to criticize enforcement agencies and all that, but there are actually a lot of good people in the government, in civil service, that we've been able to rely on over the years to make sure that we are protected, to make sure that we are safe.
I think that also comes back to what you said before. Like, it's a part of journalism that not a lot of people think about, like the other side of the story. They only look at the not the surface level, but the customer-facing part is the story. Yeah. They never think about how that story came about or what had to happen for you to piece that thing together, no?
Yeah. I think... And that's the problem. Even with Rage, a lot of people look like, wow, you guys go much more in depth. You guys have no idea. Like, our longest documentary was the one on drug trafficking, right? That's, I think, about 24 minutes. That's the longest piece we've ever done. And people think, wow, that's really in depth. But you don't see the 12 months of effort that went behind it. The hours and hours of poring through documents, of calling up victims and their families. We spend so much time on the phone talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these families, they're from really from poor backgrounds. And they rely on us as their main source of information about their court cases abroad. So that's part of the job for us by now. You know, it's not just about, I'm going to report the story and that's it. Now these families are kind of relying on us for information. And if we don't help them, no one else will. So yeah, it's a lot. It's an incredible amount of work for just 24 minutes of footage on an online documentary. It's very easy for people to just slag it off sometimes, right? If they see something, a lot of them will complain, why are your subtitles so small? Why are your audio not balanced properly? Why the music so loud? Old people like us can... we get the odd comment here and there, like stuff like that. And of course, journalists that are covering other beats will have it much worse.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we need a bit more media literacy in this country. Okay, so that's going to help people understand a bit more about how the media industry works, how journalists work, the kind of thought processes that go through, and that helps people in all other like areas of life as well. So, you know, in Scandinavian countries, you know, there's a rise in media literacy as well. I think, yeah, that's something that could really help kind of like level out the discourse right now.
On this episode of our My Merdeka special series of interviews is Ian Yee, editor and journalist over at Rage, talking about how what started out as a youth section of the Star, quote-unquote, now has a bold, independent voice of its own and is regarded as one of the best examples of journalism in the Malaysian scene. We will be back after a very short break. BFM 89.9.
Big Friendly Matcha. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
And we're back on Open for Business. We are running a special series of interviews called My Merdeka, featuring personalities who have found their independence or their Merdeka with their companies or brands or organizations. Ian Yee of the media platform, the award-winning media platform Rage, is our guest on today's episode. Do the awards help, or do they mean? Because sometimes people say that awards, no, winning awards for your work doesn't mean anything. Like the work is the prize, but does it have an effect?
Yeah. Probably not for much longer. But of course, when we were starting out, it was very important. You know, we needed to show that we were onto something. We needed sort of like legitimacy, so to speak, you know? So
the validation?
Validation, not so much. I think we're quite lucky in that sense. We get a lot of validation from the communities that we're helping, the communities that we're working with. And that's great. It's wonderful. Like, I'll never forget, we did this story on the Chin refugees in Malaysia. Their refugee rights were about to be rescinded. And so we did a campaign, you know, it's just ridiculous. You can't just rescind their refugee rights in less than 2 years and, you know, give them that period of time to find a solution. So we campaigned, and in the end, that policy was changed, right? So they are now allowed to stay in Malaysia. And, you know, we are the ones that get to bring that good news to the community, right? So, I wasn't the one who made the call, but I know some journalists who said that, I called the community leaders, the Chin community leaders, and I got to hear them, you know, scream and enjoy. And so we get a lot of that kind of validation, which I think is a huge motivation for us to go on. So awards compared to that is nothing. If you ask me, it's nothing. Me speaking to the families of drug mule victims, and them telling me how much they appreciate our work, that's validation, right? Awards give us some form of legitimacy. It helps gets us noticed. Helps us maybe when we in you know, in terms of our expansion plans. It helps when we're trying to broaden, you know, our scope of work. But it's never about self-validation, I think. At least not for me.
Okay. Do you think it's easier or more flexible being a journalist today compared to, say, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago? Because there are more avenues, you know, more platforms. You can be making like 10-minute Vice or Vox videos, and that's journalism. Tweeting is journalism as long as you're exposing the truth or telling the truth. That's journalism. And it's all 100% valid. You know, you can be a journalist on multiple avenues. So is it easier for you guys? Are you guys feeling the benefits, the perks of that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it's definitely become easier, and there are pros and cons to that. So we've seen it being used. We've seen this privilege, you know, being used for misinformation. Mm-hmm. We've seen it being hijacked, you know, by people acting in bad faith, people with, you know, with an agenda. But at the same time, you know, we've seen more young people being empowered, you know, being able to harness information. I think Greta Thunberg is the best example, right? She's using media platforms very effectively. She's using her own social media accounts to spread a message very powerfully. Is that journalism? Maybe not, but it's still using media, and she's kind of self-publishing in a way on her own Facebook page all this information that she has found about climate change and what we can do to solve it. So yeah, it's a double-edged sword. That's why media literacy is so important. We are giving young people the tools right now to become journalists and become publishers and content creators, but we're not giving them the knowledge on how to do that responsibly. And that's where media literacy comes in.
What about the Malaysian landscape itself? You guys were always, you know, pushing boundaries and pushing buttons, but is it easier to push those buttons today, you know, after a big political change? It's been a year. Or is it, you know, same old for you guys?
For us, I think we haven't felt it as keenly as probably those on the, you know, doing daily news. Those who have been really doing a really important job all this while. Very unforgiving task, you know, that they've been doing all this while. So I can definitely sense the relief among them. I can't say because I'm not in the daily newsroom, but I think it's been a good development for us as well. I guess it kind of helps where, you know, at least in principle there's more freedom of expression now. But whatever it is, we got to keep pushing, because some of these changes, they're not set in stone yet, right? Some of the laws that were supposed to be repealed or amended have not been done yet. Mm-hmm. So we still have to be vigilant about that. These are the institutional changes that will ensure our freedom of expression is maintained in the long run. So those are the actually very key battles that we should keep our eye on.
What do you want Rage to be in 10 years? Like, you know, what do you want it to be?
Wow. I don't even know what Rage will be 10 days from now. But,
ideally.
We have very simple dreams. We have very simple goals. We just want to help more people. If that means being able to help more people beyond Malaysia, that would be cool. That would be nice. I think 10 years from now, we just want to be doing what we're doing now on a bigger scale. We want to be able to help more people, bring more impact, bring our style of journalism, if you could even call it that, if you can even call it a style of journalism. But the kind of work that we do, you know, we think it's quite, you know, effective. It's quite impactful. It's done a lot of good. So if we can continue doing that on a bigger scale, we'd be very, very happy.
Ian, thanks for doing this, man. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks.
I've been speaking with Ian Yee from Rage about finding an independent voice in the media landscape while dishing out high-quality journalism that would make any Malaysian proud of what started out as that quote-unquote youth-centric section of The Star. Check them out at rage.com.my for stories that will make you think about how you view the world around you. If you would like to listen to more of our Merdeka specials, head on over to bfm.my or download our app and search for My Merdeka. This has been Arvind Yuvraj on Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
BFM's Merdeka Special is presented by Masing.
You've been listening to Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.